Welcome back, I'm Erin. And I just want to say up front that this bonus episode isn't directly about the Maura Murray case. It's about the extreme harassment and trolling that has plagued the community that surrounds her case for years. So if you're not interested in this topic, you may want to skip this one. In the episode, me and Ethan look at studies and other published research about internet trolling, including what motivates self-proclaimed trolls, why they engage in trolling behavior, and how best to handle them. I want to be clear that none of what we discuss is targeted at anyone specific. Our goal is to provide awareness so that people in the community are better able to identify trolling behavior when they see it and better equipped to respond in a way that minimizes the likelihood that they'll become a target or a victim of trolling themselves. You can find links to sources, interviews, and clips in the show notes. And as always, feel free to reach out to us with any questions or clarifications.
It's not pretty, but science has now proven that putting someone else down can make us feel better about ourselves.
There are a lot of people on the planet feeling low self-esteem, feeling beaten up by life. Maybe watching other people do badly, watching other people suffer, seems to correct your low self-esteem.
Psychologists are now finding that hardcore trolls are likely to express 4 dark personality traits. In Winnipeg, Canada, a landmark study of internet trolls has now shown that one of those dark traits stands above the rest. Sadism.
I'm Wild Goose, and I'm a member of the Bill Wagoner crew. If you were to Google Bill Wagoner crew, chances are you'd come across a term called rip trolling. When somebody dies and their family puts up a memorial up in their honor, we might set up a separate page, or we might just go on that page and create a ruckus. It's really effective when you have all these people who are already emotional, you know, with the gore photos, maybe some kind of sexually explicit photos. It sends their emotions into overdrive.
But what do the trolls get out of seeing these distraught reactions? Lulz. L-U-L-Z. Lulls are laughs. Fun and amusement at the expense of others.
Someone who gets really animated and waves their arms around on camera, or they'll scream into a microphone on a podcast. They might start crying. They become a lulls cow. They're like an ongoing target. We love that kind of reaction. We want to make them cry. We love to make them cry.
All right.
So I'll just start off real quick by telling you what rip trolling is, because it is so crazy.
Yes. Okay.
And then we'll start. But like, okay. So rip trolling is kind of how it sounds. Mm-hmm. Basically, what people do is they'll go on to Facebook memorial sites of somebody who's died, like just died.
Yeah.
And say the worst things imaginable about the person.
Oh, God.
Just to get the most extreme emotional reaction. Like, it's the most sadistic thing I've ever heard.
Yeah. Well, what could get a stronger reaction than that, right? Like, it's the most extreme you can go, basically.
Right. I mean, trolling a missing person's case, I guess, but...
Yeah, yeah.
They do it for fun. Like, they just enjoy it.
Yeah.
So, that's a good segue, actually, into my notes here.
Yes.
So, because I think that there's this perception that like one person's troll is another person's freedom fighter, I think it's important to explain what we mean when we say troll.
Sure.
So a troll is a person who posts inflammatory, insincere, digressive, extraneous, or off-topic messages in an online community with the intent of provoking readers into displaying emotional responses or manipulating others' perceptions.
Yeah.
So the thing that really distinguishes a troll from someone who is just posting something that you might find annoying or irritating or critical or insulting or whatever is that the goal of the troll is purely to get an emotional response.
Okay.
So I will say that a lot of the research on trolling is fairly nascent, meaning there really isn't much yet, just because it's such a new field.
Right.
But just to start, so what are some of the descriptive statistics about trolls, like age, gender, things of that nature? The average age is about 24. They have an average of 14 years in the gaming world. So it is very, very highly strongly linked to gaming.
Interesting.
9% are female.
Yeah, well, that's not surprising.
I think it probably roughly mirrors our jail population. But the point being that it does seem like it's a pretty male-driven phenomenon.
Yeah.
There is a very strong undercurrent of misogyny and anti-feminist harassment campaigns. One of the most famous harassment campaigns is Gamergate.
Have you heard of that? Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So we won't go into that because it could be like its own like series, actually.
Yeah.
But it is a very like strong underlying, I mean, I would argue motivation in a lot of ways. It just looking at like the demographics of the people that are trolls, it kind of tracks.
Yeah. Yeah.
The vast majority of trolls know their victims.
Interesting. Well, know in what sense? Like, could it be they know them through online interactions?
Right. So know as opposed to completely random.
Right.
So the definition of troll comes from fishing. It's a fishing term. It's when you like cast your net out into the water and you just like wait for a fish to bite.
Right.
And so that's where it started from. The idea was that like you just go onto a random image board or whatever and you just like look for somebody to troll. Or you just wait for somebody to like bite.
Right.
I think that's where the conception started. Now it's people kind of have the image of like the troll under the bridge.
Yes. Yeah.
But yeah, I think that what it means is that they have like some connection. They have some reason. Like the person is like known to them in some capacity.
Right. Interesting. Okay. I wouldn't have expected that. Because I think of it, I guess I think of it as what I've mostly encountered, which is randos on the internet giving you shit for like a little while.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess I haven't encountered that enough to account for all the trolling.
Yeah. Right?
And like those people usually, you know, they do a little bit and they go away. And it's like, is that person even a troll or they're just having like an off day?
Right.
And you never actually know, right? Because it's some stranger that you met like in a game you were playing. You never see them again, as far as you know. You just move on to a new room and you get a whole new group of people and that's it. So you never actually find out like, well, does this person do this all the time? Was it just one off? That's interesting because that lines up with like the real world a little bit, right? Because in the real world, like that kind of behavior, I mean, you're talking about someone who's like a stalker in some sense where they like become obsessed with somebody and like harass them and give them trouble. Like that's what I think of when I think of in the real world, what is a troll? It's someone who you do know.
Right.
Because they met you somewhere and then they developed they like marked you as a target and then like followed up on it and kept pestering you.
That's interesting. Yeah. And it obviously tracks with like crimes in general or like most of them are committed by people that the victim is known to the perpetrator.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But I was surprised at that also. I would have to think it probably is somewhat context dependent. Like I would imagine political boards, you might see more of the random type trolls, like just looking for somebody to go after.
Yeah, well, and I also wonder, like, how do you define someone who is known to you? So, like, just to connect it to Maura Murray, in the case of, like, that community, could a troll be somebody who initially doesn't know anybody in the community? At some point, everyone's, like, unknown, right? So, like, I guess I'd be curious to know, like, how do we define how someone is known? And maybe what it means is trolls don't just – it's not just drive-by. You know, they don't just, like – hit someone and then move on because then they would never really become known. But what they do is they hit someone and then they keep hitting them. So it's like, yeah, of course they become known because they don't go away. And so 99% of their activity is targeting people who they know. Only that first interaction or the first few interactions is really someone you could say you don't, quote unquote, don't know.
Yeah, that's a really good point, actually. And that's a good way to define it, like, or define it by saying what it's not.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a drive-by, generally.
Right. Right. Yeah. And that's like scarier.
I know. Yeah. It's a little disconcerting.
Yeah. If it's just someone who's just like wandering past and like being an asshole, like, okay, that sucks. And it's really annoying, especially when you keep running into those people.
But it's also not personal.
But it's not personal. Exactly. Yeah. And it's not intimidating, really. But when they keep coming back, they keep targeting you and your community, that gets uncomfortable.
Right. What triggers trolls? Like, what's their catalyst? What motivates people to begin trolling? So studies have shown that a lot of it is personality driven. Trolls presented uniformly as hostile and antisocial and are highly correlated to three of the four components of the dark tetrad. Have you heard of the dark tetrad?
Yes. I've heard of it as the dark triad.
Some call it triad, some call it tetrad. Okay. But it's psychopathy, Machiavellianism, and sadism, and then narcissism is in there as well. So psychopathy, Machiavellianism, and sadism correlate extremely highly to self-proclaimed trolls. Mm-hmm. And for anyone that doesn't know, psychopathy is a pathological lack of empathy, basically, I think is how it's broadly defined. Mm-hmm. Machiavellianism is the tendency to be manipulative and to sort of be driven by power and do whatever you deem necessary to gain power.
Yeah, and well, to treat others as like objects to achieve like your personal goals, right?
Yeah, the ends justify the means. That's the way I always think of it. Mm-hmm. And then sadism is receiving pleasure from acts involving the receipt or infliction of pain or humiliation. So basically taking enjoyment in people's misfortunes or pain.
Right. And that's the one that I think most people would instinctively associate with trolling. Like that seems like what's happening with a lot of trolls. Like it's because especially if you're not thinking of like the power aspect, you're just like, what benefit do you have from doing this? It must be you just enjoy making me suffer. So like, I think that's the first place like I would mentally go is to like what someone's like the cause of that behavior is.
Yep. Well, the academic research says that that is accurate because sadism correlated the strongest with trolling execution.
Okay.
Quote, researchers conclude online trolling seems to be an internet manifestation of everyday sadism, effectively reducing trolling to a singular personality-driven cause. So, like, if there is one cause, like, if there's one personality trait that could be attributed to, like, trolling behavior, it is sadistic tendencies and sadism.
Okay. Makes sense. So, now, I don't know if this is part of your research. I don't want to get you too sidetracked, but if someone is a sadist, what is the probability that they will engage in online trolling? You know, like, is that like the path that most sadists take at this day and age for their, you know, to get their pleasure? Or is it like a subset of sadists and other sadists would pursue other non-digital means of satisfying that impulse?
I don't know. I imagine that there's a lot of ways to get out your sadistic impulses, but I don't think that all sadists are trolls, but all trolls are sadists.
Right.
If that makes sense.
Yeah.
Generally, all trolls, at least the most aggressive ones, not all trolling behavior is from like sadistic people, but the most aggressive, the most destructive generally tends to be people that have a tendency towards sadism.
Right.
One particularly sadistic example that I found was, and I'm paraphrasing, and maybe I'll try to find the quote to put it in there because it was so shocking to me, but one of the trolls said, when asked if they wanted their target to commit suicide, and they said no, and not because of any kind of like internal conscience, but because if the person killed themselves, it would ruin the fun because then they wouldn't be there to react anymore. It was like destroying a toy.
Oh my gosh.
Like breaking a toy. Isn't that insane? But like that like shows you the degree of like sadistic tendencies.
Yeah. Yeah. Woof. Treating people like they're just objects for your amusement.
Yeah. Totally instrumental. So why do trolls say that they troll? The first reason is they do it as a direct attack on another player's enjoyment of the game. Basically, they want to ruin the game for other people.
Yeah.
It's just purely antisocial, antagonistic.
And that's where the, you know, sadism would come into play. Mm-hmm. It's like, well, the act of ruining something for somebody else brings some people pleasure.
Right.
So it's actually not that hard to figure out if you assume the person's a sadist. It's like, yeah, that's what they want to do is ruin your day. They just get off on this.
Yep.
And in video games, it's really easy to do. You can ruin someone's day, like, super easy because there's no, like, real consequences.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just like a fertile territory for engaging in those kinds of behaviors.
Right.
This game I play, it's not, like, released yet. It's in, like, extreme early beta. It's called Star Citizen. And it's somewhat infamous, but it's like you have spaceships and you fly around and stuff. And one of the things people will do is, like, ram their ship into yours to, like, blow it up, like, just for fun. And what they'll do is, like, you can, like, send messages to people. So if someone crashes into you and you send them messages like, hey, what the hell? Like, why did you do that? Then, like, they'll do it again. And if you said, because they're trying to get you to be like, ah, what are you doing? Stop doing that. You know, like, they're trying to get you to react. So, like, if you don't, or if you just, like, log off and go somewhere, like, they'll leave you alone. So it's like, it's literally like they don't know how you're going to react, but there's a chance that you will react in a way that they find amusing. And so that's why they do it. And if they don't get the reaction they're looking for, maybe they'll just move on, or maybe they'll consider it a challenge. Like, this guy's not reacting, but if I keep doing it to him, like, maybe I can break him.
Yep. That is, like, one tactic, like a very well-known tactic. It's called griefing.
Yeah.
In games where people will sabotage their own teammates for fun. That's all they do. There's also sensation seeking. So participants described it as the creation of drama and as a way to get attention. The victim's reaction figured heavily as a source of thrill or enjoyment. The more outrageous the reaction, the better.
Right. Yeah, that's where you see, I don't see it too much anymore, but the people used to say they did it for the lulz, L-U-L-Z.
Yeah. Lulz are like the currency of the troll.
Right.
For sure.
Right. So it becomes like a game in and of itself to like obtain this specific reaction. And that could either be driven by like Sada's, you know, like a sadistic pleasure coming from it, or it could maybe just be like, I don't really care if the other person is unhappy. Like, I do just want that goal, though. I do want to like achieve that objective of having made them upset so I can brag to my friends about it or whatever.
Right. And just going back real quick to the thrill-seeking, like, so the thrill-seeking trolls, the ones that are singularly motivated by getting the most outrageous reactions possible.
Mm-hmm.
What was interesting is some in that category describe what they do as a social experiment designed to gauge other players. Like, they play both sides, they create these weird scenarios where they just want to see how people react.
Yeah.
In essence, toying with them.
Right.
And there's also interaction seeking, which they defined as an unorthodox method of communication designed to make players get involved in both the conversation and the game, which was pretty interesting to me because it's sort of like a side game to the game.
Right.
Like building drama or building, almost creating like multi-dimensional players.
Interesting.
And I absolutely think that there are instances of that in the Mormor case, for sure.
Yes. I've seen that before where it looks like somebody in a game is like not interested at all in the content of the game, but they're really interested in like behind the scenes stuff or, you know, a conversation or activity that's like not central to the game, but they seem to like want people to engage in that. And when you suggest that like, hey, can we like do the thing that like we're supposed to do here? People will actually get mad and be like, what are you even doing here if you don't want to like engage in all this like drama and like stuff? Like for some people, like that is the reason that they're there.
Right. And I'm sure in some communities, like I'm sure in some gaming communities, it's a little bit different. Like you can legitimately be there for the secondary game, like the gossip.
Yeah.
Drama. Like that might be a thing. I don't really know. I don't play games besides Boggle.
Yeah, so if we were to look at like a popular game like World of Warcraft, for example, there's definitely like multiple layers of games going on. There's attacking characters and like earning loot and experience points and so forth, which is like you could say like the main game, but then there's like the role-playing aspect of the game where it's like it's all done through chat and communication. And some people's idea of playing the game is to just go somewhere where there's a bunch of people hanging out and like talk to them and like role play that they're like doing some maybe even mundane activity and to them that's like an important part of the game, where I would consider that like freaking boring and I don't want to do that, but like to some people, like that's what you're there for, right? Is that kind of thing. And it's interesting because I think anybody can get drawn into the drama of any particular thing that they're interested in. Like, it's inherently interesting, some of the behind the scenes stuff. So even if you're not there for that purpose, that doesn't mean you're never going to engage with it. You almost can't tear yourself away from the drama because there's something that just humans just want to get into that.
Or if you're being constantly the focus.
Well, that's the other thing, you can't escape
it
sometimes.
It's hard to tear yourself away.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, no matter how much you want to not be involved in it, if someone's dragging you in, you might not have a choice.
Right. But the other reason is boredom. So self-proclaimed trolls, they see themselves as being beyond, quote, beyond the game. And having seen all there is to see and thus trying to win at trolling instead, it's like a metagame. And I can see that happening in the gaming community, but it's extremely applicable to the more Murray community where there's really not new information often.
Yeah.
You can consume everything there is to consume and still be addicted, as we know people are.
Yeah.
And so you need something to like satisfy that craving. So boredom is one of the big triggers.
Right. So that's really interesting. Like, you've gotten into this community, you're interested in it, you know these people and these players, but you've mastered all the knowledge and information there is to master. So what do you do? Like, in my head, I'm like, well, you move on to something else. You go to another community and you find something interesting to do there, or you, I don't know, develop a hobby or whatever. But for someone who's like really invested in it, they might say like, no, this is the, I know these people. This is like where I want to be. I spent so much time like becoming comfortable here. I don't want to go anywhere else. And that might be where the boredom causes you to make something interesting instead of just going somewhere else. Cause it's like, well, I've invested here. I want to be here. I'm not leaving. I'm going to make it the thing I want it to be.
Totally. So especially for the people that not only have like mastered all there is to know, but also have those sort of like sadistic tendencies. Mm-hmm. They see it as, I can control this community.
Yeah, I can remake it in my own image.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, I can gain power. That's the Machiavellian aspect as well, the gain, you know, desire to gain power and control and influence. Which, yeah, so that's really interesting because, like, I've never, like, felt that desire with the Moira Murray community, but I've been accused of steering before. And I'm like, what are you even talking about? But if you're someone who, like, does that, who does seek that control and power, of course you're going to see it in others. You're going to assume that other
people...
You're going
to project, I think, yes, is the word you're looking,
yes,
for.
Yes, exactly. You're going to project those impulses onto other people. And so, like, then it makes total sense. I mean, it doesn't make sense, but, like, it would make sense from that perspective to accuse someone of steering.
Right.
Yeah. It's funny because, like, that's the sort of opinion that I've articulated before. You know, I've said... It, as we've discussed, like, why is this happening? Like, why are people responding this way? I've said, well, you know, there's people who are the king of their little castle and they're, you know, upset about someone else coming in and, you know, upsetting it. But I never really thought about it any deeper than that, like, in terms of, you know, what is this person's, like, motivating factor? Like, is this really this person's, like, whole life? This case and being, like, the king of this little castle? Because I can't conceive of, like, that. But I guess to a unusual enough person who has one of these or some of these dark tetrad traits, maybe that is the case. You know, maybe that is most of what they have going on in their life or a significant portion of what they have going on in their life. And then the stakes are much higher.
Yeah. And so one of the quotes from a self-proclaimed troll was, "Trolls generally interact a lot. We like participation from the other side, too. It gets really boring when you're the only one trolling. It has to be a few trolls to be fun." And they're making the point that, like, a lot of times it's at least two people doing the trolling.
Right.
Like, it's not going to be fun for the people interested in the drama in the Moira Murray case if you're the only one interested in the drama. You need other people to be interested in it and sort of participating.
Yeah, you need it to be like back and forth, and you need feedback from your actions.
Yeah.
You need to see the response, and it's got to be continuous, or else eventually you're going to lose interest.
Yeah, and this one was, like, I sort of put a star next to it because it's a little bit contradictory to some of the other premises. Like, it kind of implies, like, a pro-social behavior to some extent.
Yeah, so it's, well, yeah, but it's, It's antisocial, but it's not antisocial in the sense of like I don't want to engage in social interaction. It's antisocial in the sense of like I definitely do, but I'm doing it in a way that causes harm to, or anguish in other
right.
people.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Humans can't escape our social nature, right? Like we all want to engage in social interactions. It's like part of our like DNA.
Yeah.
But some people do it in ways that are like really harmful, and that other people would say like, well, that person's like ruining this social interaction, but maybe mm-hmm. from that person's perspective they're engaging in social interaction because that's just how they do it and how they see it.
Right. So like the closest analogy I could think of, and I've thought about this for a long time, is like an arsonist. Because the psychology of arson is pretty interesting. Like a lot of firefighters end up being arsonists or are drawn to become firefighters because they have like arsonist tendencies.
Mm-hmm.
They're interesting because what they like to do is like set the fire and then watch the drama unfold. And then sometimes participate in like the extinguishing of the fire.
Right.
But ultimately they like to see the destruction. So like that's like their motivation. Like it's very antisocial, it's very destructive and
right.
sadistic and all of those things.
Right. But it's still participatory.
Yeah.
They want to be part of
mm-hmm.
the society, part of the response.
Not only part of, but they like to be heroes.
Ah, yes.
So that's where you get like the firefighter
yeah.
arson thing happening, because like they like to be the one that like jumps right in there and is the hero for all of these people that are just frantic.
Right. Well, and if you want to create a situation where you can be a hero, the best way to do that is to cause the problem that requires heroics.
Exactly.
Otherwise, you got to wait around for an opportunity to be heroic. And that's, you know, they don't just come along.
Right.
That's really interesting. I've thought about that in terms of arson, because I did know that fact about some firefighters are arsonists, but I never thought about that in terms of trolling, where somebody might be engaging in destructive activity in a community because they want to be able to come in and clean it up, or be seen to be cleaning up or fighting the troll, which online, that's ridiculously easy to do, because you can be both the person who's starting the fire and trying to put it out, and no one would even know.
Exactly. Yeah, and it's very Machiavellian. It's very, like, manipulative. So
yeah,
when I think about people that do this in the Moira Murray community,
mm-hmm.
it's the same people that both set the fires and are deeply involved in claiming to want to help put them out.
Yeah, that's very apparent. That has happened. I've definitely seen people who I would consider trolls who are like very impassioned about how they're trying to help and fix things and so forth. And it's like, you are definitely not, but you want everyone to think that you mm-hmm. are trying to help, and you are so dedicated to helping.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And I've often wondered, like, what is that? Like, why are you doing that? But it's having your cake and eating it too, right? Like, because mm-hmm. it's kind of like everyone wants to be the hero. Anyone can identify with that. Almost anybody can identify with that impulse. So if you also have the, but I also want to destroy stuff impulse, well, if you do both roles, you're getting like even more enjoyment out of it.
Right. And you can do one secretly and one publicly.
Yeah.
So I just want to read a quote that I came across in one of the articles, and I'll link to it in the show notes, but it's a forensic profiler.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, quote, "Arson, like bombing and various other forms of terrorism, is the crime of a coward. It is perpetrated by a person, typically a man, who wants to strike out but does not have the courage or interpersonal skills to face his intended victim nose to nose." Douglas also noted, "Like the overtly sexual crimes of rape and rape murder that many arsonists evolve to, arson is an attempt to gain control and power and attain a feeling of success in their lives. Look at all of the people an arsonist gets to manipulate and control. The victims of the fire, firefighters, police, other figures of authority, the media, and even the community in general."
Oof.
I know, right? So the one subcategory I want to talk about for a minute is the vigilante trolls, because this is also one where I sort of have like a moral dilemma about. Because when you think about like groups like Anonymous going after Scientology.
Yeah, there's like an idealism that's behind their motivation.
Theoretically, at least they say.
Yes, they claim one. Yeah. Can you think of any like prominent examples? You mentioned Anonymous. Are there other like organized groups or just like infamous cases where there was like vigilantism at play?
So, yeah. Well, Anonymous has done, there have been like multiple vigilante campaigns. Mm-hmm. Like Scientology comes to mind right away because it's, I think it was one of their first ones and one that I sort of like slightly more sympathetic to.
Yeah.
Another one that they said was motivated by vigilantism was like going after the West, what is it? Not West Memphis. Westboro.
Westboro Baptist Church.
Yes. Yeah. The Westboro Baptist Church. So remember those people? They would like protest gay funerals and...
Yes. Yeah. Funerals for dead soldiers and stuff.
Yeah. Dead soldiers. Yeah. Like, yeah. I mean, essentially like rip trolling, but in real life.
Yeah.
So they would protest those people. They would protest Scientology. They would enact like vigilante hacktivism toward those groups.
Yep.
But then the reason I almost like give it pause and wonder like, is that really what your motivation is because it tends to over time, they start to kind of transform into like they attacked Sony because they didn't like something about like a game rollout. And then you really kind of have to wonder, like, are you sublimating your sadistic and aggressive tendencies and trying to validate it with something socially acceptable?
Right.
Maybe, probably.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
So, well,
you've got the wanting to be a hero, you know, aspect mm-hmm. in there. And then, like you said, it's seen as more socially acceptable, even if not everyone agrees, even with your mission. The fact that you have one, you know, is a little more socially acceptable than like an anarchist, a troll
exactly.
who's just like trying to like make trouble. People say, well, at least they're fighting for what they believe in, that kind of thing.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
And like the most extreme example in the other direction in terms of like where I'm like really questioning this sort of like vigilante justice thing is like the rip trolling people saying that they did it because like their reasoning was, well, you have all these grief tourists who go to these websites, go to Facebook and go to a memorial site and mm-hmm. they don't know the person and they're saying, oh, I'm so sorry for your loss and all this stuff as if they had some kind of relationship with the person and they didn't. And so their argument or their like justification is that they are attacking those people.
Whoa. Right. Right.
I don't buy Whoa. That.
Yeah, that's like, okay, well, why do you care? You know, it's like,
yeah,
it's not worth what you're doing. Like, that's not justification for what you're doing, because what the behavior that you have a problem with is not actually that bad.
Right.
Yeah. It's like a minor thing.
Like, who's harmed?
Yeah, they're not actually hurting anybody. Yeah.
And I guess the underlying objection that they have is an objection to disingenuousness, I guess.
Yes. Yes. Like you don't, you're pretending to care, but you don't really care. And that's bad.
Right.
I look at that as an example of projection, right? Like they don't have those emotional responses. And so they don't believe that other people do either.
Mm.
So they can only see it as ingenuine because they don't understand how you could genuinely like care enough about somebody else to like go to bat for them.
Right. They, yeah, you're probably right. They don't have those like empathetic feelings. They can't understand how you could possibly feel empathetic towards someone that you don't know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that bothers them because it's like, because they see it everywhere. You know, they see all these people, all these phonies out there, you know, acting like, you know, they actually care about people. And it has consequences on their life, right? Because it creates these social norms that they're like constantly violating. And they're like, but these norms shouldn't even exist. You know, mm-hmm. so like people get mad at me all the time and it's because of like phonies like you who are acting like there's this like, you know, abstract morality that doesn't actually exist and that you don't even really believe in. So you're creating this like system of rules like and it's just screwing me over because I can't abide by it because I don't understand it. So I'm going to like punish you for it.
Yeah. Wow.
Oof. Yeah.
The Bill Wagoner crew has never pushed anyone towards suicide, nor have we tried to. That's never our intent. Why would we kill a perfectly good Lulz cow? If we were to knock them off the internet or out of real life, what benefit would that provide us? You know, how are we going to get any Lulz out of someone who's 6 feet underground?
Feminists are frequently targeted by trolls. Gina knew to expect attacks, but she's been overwhelmed by the volume of abuse.
I have a large reach, but I don't feel like it somehow makes me better than anybody or makes me some sort of powerful figure, but they see it as very powerful, and that's why they want to shut it down.
Gina sees little difference between her trolls and a stalker.
When you think about patterns of stalking, stalkers don't just do it really quietly. They leave their victim clues that they're being stalked in order to scare them.
Internet trolling has two essential parts: the attack and your reaction. A big reaction is what the trolls crave, and the way you respond determines whether or not you are a worthwhile target.
If it's just somebody that's just going to, you know, block us and that's the end of the game, ah, well, you guys suck. That doesn't provide too much entertainment. I mean, the real world's so boring and it's lacking in lulls. It really is. I don't think we'd be able to find this in real life. The internet presented something that was never available to us before.
So the next section is the role of the community.
Ah, yes.
So this is where it gets into what you can do to mitigate trolling.
What can you do to stop it? Yeah, or deal with it.
Yeah, because you can never stop trolling. But it does seem like there are certain tactics that are more or less effective for dealing with them. Mm-hmm. So they sort of looked at like five responses that you can have to trolling.
Yep.
One is rage, which is by far the most common.
Yeah.
That's like what most people go to. They automatically, like, they try to defend themselves.
Yeah.
They fight with the troll.
Yeah.
React, essentially. They react strongly.
Yeah, emotionally. Yeah.
The second is ignore, mm-hmm. which does take some, you know, self-control.
Yes.
Block. You can block the troll.
Mm-hmm. Prevent them from participating.
Exactly. So it's a way of ignoring, I suppose.
Yeah.
Another response is you can troll back.
Counter-troll, yeah.
Yeah, counter-troll, which a lot of people, that is like how they segue into trolling.
Yep.
Or the last one was interesting. It's you choose to participate, but not in any of the other ways that I mentioned, but you join the conversation around the trolling. You like defend the victim. You talk about the trolling.
Right.
Which I guess is sort of what we're doing here.
Yes, I would say that. Yeah.
Yeah. But some of these are more and less effective. So
sure.
One of the more interesting things I found was that the number one reason why people troll is because they've been trolled.
Okay. They're reacting. Yeah. They see it as like, how can I get revenge on this person? They're not here. They're not physically in front of me. I control them. I can do what they're doing. I can fight fire with fire. Like, that's the obvious direction you can go to, like, try to fight back.
Right.
Because there really isn't much you can do, but you can do that. You can counter troll.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whether or not that's an effective way to, like, achieve anything constructive is a whole other discussion. But, like, at an intuitive, emotional level, yeah, that makes total sense. Even though trolling is the thing that is hurting you, it's also the thing that can satisfy that urge to, like, exact some sort of justice.
Yeah. The most common reactions, the rage and the trolling reaction or counter-trolling reaction are the most common, but they also perpetuate the trolling behavior because you're giving them exactly what they want.
Yeah.
So what they want is an emotional response.
Yeah.
And so when you react, when you engage, like, you're perpetuating the problem. Like, you become part of the problem. You enable them by reacting.
Yeah. Yeah, you validate their behavior in the first place because that's what they want to get. So you're mm-hmm. causing them to have more reason to keep doing it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Even like counter trolling, which is not necessarily, you're not showing an emotional response. You are engaging directly with them in a way that like they would see as you are participating. You are encouraging them. And it's like, oh, okay, you're in the game. You're playing the game now. And mm-hmm. it's almost like a, maybe even like a challenge. Like, oh, I'm going to out troll you now. Oh, you think you're going to troll me? No, no, no. So that's like, I can see that like definitely amplifying, even though you're not giving that emotional response, you're giving them another response that they might find enticing or interesting.
Exactly. Exactly. You're enabling, you're participating. Like, mm-hmm. like what they said is they like interaction. So you're mm-hmm. interacting with them at some capacity. So that's enabling.
Yeah.
Whereas like the least popular reaction, but the most effective method for stopping the trolls is ignoring and reporting.
Yeah.
So those are the two self-proclaimed trolls. Like if they're ignored and they're reported, they get bored. They go away.
Yeah.
And sort of like the middle ground where I mean I'm certainly been guilty of it without realizing how much it actually enables the trolls is sort of discussing the trolling or jumping to the victim's defense.
Yeah.
Because it like encourages their thrill seeking, like the fight.
Right.
They want to fight back.
Right, right. So you're by trying to counter what they're doing, that's created a situation where they can now counter your countering to achieve their initial objective. So any degree to which you succeed at like defeating their arguments or defeating their influence is just going to cause them to react by doing it more.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so it's one of those things where like it's not fair if you get trolled. Like it's not fair, but but you can't really think of it in terms of like fair and unfair. You sort of have to think of like cause and reaction.
Right.
Or cause and effect, rather.
Yeah.
And by far the most like the way to sort of mitigate it or to quell it is by ignoring and reporting.
Yeah, well that's tough though, because how do you get an entire community of people to ignore and report without also talking about it?
Well, and what defines a community at all? Right. That's also like one of my like asterisk questions, like how do you define the community?
Well, that's a very good question. So to me, the problem with ignoring is like, yeah, if everyone ignores the person, that could be effective. But if just I'm ignoring the person and everyone else is engaging with them, they're not being ignored. So effectively, my ignoring them achieves nothing. You know, it's not helpful unless it's like a collective reaction, or at least collective amongst the group of people that they want a response from. So, you know, if they're getting a response from someone they don't care about, maybe, but they are being ignored by the group that they're trying to get a response from, then maybe it could still be effective. Maybe they don't need to be ignored by like literally everybody, but if they're ignored by the people they care about, then maybe that would cause them to move on. But like, yeah, how do you achieve that?
I mean, I think it sort of gets into the different platforms. Uh-huh. So I want to talk about it in a minute, but like the Village Voice piece, he uses a lot of like architectural language. Mm. Like he sort of likens the community to like an actual home kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And so it is kind of like one way to think about the different platforms that you can choose to engage in or not engage in, like just like using the architecture analogy, like Facebook for the most part is heavily monitored. Mm-hmm. You join communities where there's an administrator, where they have like full control. You can leave that community and not participate in it if you don't like their rules, right? So you can sort of like choose your own space.
Yeah.
It's more of like architecturally, it's like a walled off garden where like everyone's kind of like safe for the most part because there's moderation.
Yeah.
And because you are generally not anonymous on Facebook.
Yeah.
Whereas something like Reddit is, number one, it's anonymous, which is different than something like Facebook, which, you know, there's the whole anonymity thing and disinhibition.
Yeah.
Inhibition. Yeah. I don't know why I can't say that. Inhibition. You know, humans evolved for however hundred millions of years to communicate with body language. And in a matter of decades, we've sort of like wiped that away. And so when you don't have to be emotionally responsible for the reactions that you cause, obviously people are going to be more, they're going to say things that they wouldn't if they have to say it, you know, using literally their own like face or their own identity. So, but whereas like something like Reddit, you know, depending on like what community you're in, it might not be the most heavily monitored. A lot of times you can just like join a community. You don't have to like get accepted into it. Mm-hmm. Architecturally, I kind of liken it to like different types of bars that you can go to, because like some are like super divey.
Yeah.
And like they have like no standards, and like some are super, you know, swanky and you have to be wearing a jacket and you have to uphold a certain etiquette.
Yeah.
There's choice, but it's also anonymous.
Yeah. Because it's anonymous, it like selects for a certain sort of person, you know, more so than Facebook does, who might be more inclined to cause trouble or maybe someone who is not inclined to cause trouble, but they are really in on the anonymity part, and so they're not doing anything to combat or get rid of people who are troublemakers because they're like, oh, well, everyone, you know, belongs here, and we just have to, like, make it work. Mm-hmm. Whereas in Facebook, maybe it's a little more policed. People be like, no, just kick them out.
Right. And, like, Twitter, I likened to a public restroom. Because, like,
yeah.
Anyone can go in.
Yep.
You can block people, but they'll still bang on the door. Like, can't.
Yeah.
It's just a free-for-all. There's no moderation except for the platform.
Yeah, except for the, like, very, very, very high-level mm-hmm. moderation of, like, can you participate in this platform or can you not?
Right. There's no middle ground.
Yeah, there's no rooms. There's no, like,
mm-hmm.
like areas within Twitter. It's all just one big free-for-all.
Right, exactly. So, like, when you think about where you're more or less inclined to encounter trolling, well, you can sort of put it on a continuum. Like, you're probably most susceptible on a place like Twitter.
Yeah.
A little bit less on a place like Reddit and far less on a place like Facebook.
Right.
So, you can never get rid of trolling, but at least you can sort of, like, control the atmosphere that you choose to engage in.
Right. Right. Yeah, and, like, it kind of tells you, like, well, what's going to be the effectiveness of, like, various strategies, you know, for dealing with it. Like, how much time am I going to put into trying to deal with trolls on Twitter, knowing that, like, it's inherently unpoliceable, mm-hmm. you know, versus, yeah. like, Facebook. It's like, okay, if we've got a troll on Facebook, it's worth maybe dealing with because, like, there are ways to deal with it.
Right, right.
So, yeah. like, and we all know about that and we know what they are and we use them. So, like, maybe focus on that rather than even trying to deal with, you know, Twitter, because it's mm-hmm. just, like, inherently not, you're not going to have much success there. Or even the strategies that you can use are going to be different.
Yeah.
Like, you can't really, you can report on Twitter, but, like, the stuff that someone can get banned for is, like, fairly limited, right? It's not,
mm-hmm.
it's not, like, being an asshole. So, like, the only real strategy there then would be to ignore someone.
Yeah, and block them.
And block them,
and
yeah.
Because, like, the biggest difference is there's no interim moderator. There's no,
mm-hmm.
like you said, like no rooms in between the platform and the user.
Yeah.
So
here's a philosophical question, quasi-philosophical. Is a podcast in which we maybe instruct people as to, like, scientifically the most effective way to deal with trolls, is that participating?
Yeah.
You know, are we contributing more to the problem or more to the solution? Because at least we're proposing, like, okay, well, don't do this, but if no one tells you, you won't know that you shouldn't do this. So, like, you do need some number of people who are participating and providing that message if you want people to actually, like, get the message.
Right. And so that's exactly what my thought was. So, yes, we are sort of participating in it by talking about it. Although I tried to think of a way to do it in a way that didn't specifically, like, fuel the drama, you know? So,
yeah, we'll point out particular people. Yeah.
So, yes, but we're only participating to explain how participating is not the greatest method to deal with trolling, generally speaking.
Right, right. maybe for educational purposes, but, like, definitely once you've achieved that, stop.
Right, right. Yeah.
Like, if you have a message to communicate about not engaging with somebody, okay, maybe you need to communicate that in order for them to know, but once you have, you've exhausted all the benefit that you're going to get from, like, talking about it.
Exactly. And one of the reasons I thought it might be beneficial to explain it to people is because I didn't know this stuff before. Yeah. I read, like, it's not necessarily intuitive.
Right.
So, I mean, I've definitely engaged in, like, what they would call participation
mm-hmm.
in, you know, defending people and engaging in the conversation around the trolling without maybe realizing that it was just enabling more trolling.
Yeah.
So, again, like, you can never stop the trolls entirely, but you can, like, the awareness of what's going to generally cause them to get bored and go away or become enabled and incite more trolling is probably, like, that's all you can do. It's just
right.
more awareness.
So I buy all that and I understand that. My problem now is, well, how do I determine what is trolling behavior? So, like, how do you know you're dealing with a troll? And this comes into play, particularly in this case, where I think there's probably a lot of people who would say, like, okay, that kind of makes sense to ignore them. And, like, I do try to ignore them. But, like, I don't always know if, for example, in the case of, like, someone who's providing a tip, like, mm-hmm. can you afford to ignore it?
Mm.
You know, because if you follow up on it, you are participating. You are, and that has provided encouragement to the troll. But on the other hand, if it's a real tip and you don't follow up on it, then you've missed an opportunity to, like, achieve something good. So, like, what criteria would you use in that particular case for not engaging?
So the first one is a really interesting one and also a very difficult one because mm-hmm. of some of the types of trolling that people like to do
mm-hmm.
that I've learned about. And one of those types is also one of the first examples of trolling going back to like the early 90s.
Mm-hmm.
There was a message board type thing, like one of the early message boards, and the self-proclaimed first troll, which he's not, but but he claims he is. It was this board called, it was something about cats. It was like pets, cat lover, something like that.
Okay.
And this group of like pranksters essentially. And one of the things that they would do is go onto these cat boards and outline the most insane problem that they're having with their cat, like just like gross and mm-hmm. extreme, like vulgar. And I don't really want to mention these examples, but you can kind of imagine.
Okay.
And they pushed it to the point where you're pretty sure this is a troll, but you're not positive.
Right.
Like their whole game was to like go right up to that line and get people to believe that it was a real thing. And of course, people did believe it was a real thing because a lot of people are very caring, empathetic people, and they want to help.
Right.
And so, and that's what they found funny. That's what they found like amusing. Like,
right.
How could you consider like this insane, outrageous thing that I'm saying about like probing my cat? And
right.
Like, how can you think that this is real? And that's a really hard one because it is one that has clearly been seen in the Maura Murray case.
Yes.
In fact, I think it's one of the troll favorites.
Mm-hmm.
And I think without victim blaming, it might be in part a function of the platforms that are more open to high improbability occurrences.
Right. Yeah, like the more stuff that you consider as like legitimate possibilities, the more you are susceptible to someone who's trying to trick you into believing something.
Yeah, and I mean, there was one recently where I looked at it and my immediate thought was, this is absolutely insane. How could anyone possibly believe that, particularly when this same exact trolling prank had just happened
mm-hmm.
using the same method.
Right.
But I can understand how maybe if you're a very open-minded person, maybe it's a hard call, but
yeah, some people might say, well, and also like, well, I'll follow up on it. Cause like, what's the harm? But that's kind of like the point is actually there is harm. So maybe we need to get away from this idea that like, well, it couldn't hurt to look into it.
Yeah. Yeah, you do want to throw around ideas. Like, there's nothing wrong with, like, tossing around even kind of wild, crazy ideas privately.
Yeah.
It's good to keep an open mind and think outside the box and bounce ideas off people, even if they're a little out there.
Mm-hmm.
But there's different ways of looking into it. You don't have to publicize it to follow it up.
Right.
And I think, like, the thing that trolls really respond to is, like, the public reaction.
Yeah.
So I would say that if there's something that seems fairly implausible and like it could be a troll and the implications of like publicizing this are just going to perpetuate the problem and perpetuate misinformation being published and proliferated, maybe you don't publish that. Maybe you just follow it up privately.
Right.
That would be one way.
Yeah. And so there's a lot of reasons to handle it that way anyway.
Yeah, I know.
So, like, and that's kind of like how you handle things.
Yeah. One of the other games common games that trolls, like the more sadistic trolls, like to play. I mentioned the pushing the bounds of reality type. But then there's also ones that like to instigate intra-community conflict. So set multiple fires and throw gasoline on this one, throw gasoline on that one. And then
like blame this group for starting the fire.
Yes.
Tell group B that group A started it, and tell group A that group B started it, and then watch.
And then watch them fight. And yeah. I'm fairly certain I've been a unwilling participant of that type of trolling. The best example I can think of is, it was like 2014, and from Gamergate, and because feminists are such prime targets for whatever reason for trolls, this group of trolls decided to go after feminists on Twitter. Mm-hmm. And so they started a hashtag End Father's Day, knowing that some of the feminists would be like hardcore, like, yeah, End Father's Day, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And like the more like kind of reasonable ones would be like, I don't know about that.
Right.
And so so they started this hashtag and just like created an issue.
Right.
That no one was proposing.
Yeah, that no one actually would have thought to support, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And just watch them, like, go after each other. And, like, that was what their entertainment was.
Yeah. And I do wonder if, like, maybe that could even happen in the more Murray community, where you've got people advocating for these notions, and then you've got other people like, oh, yeah, well, yeah, what he said, yeah, yeah. And it's like, that person doesn't even actually believe it. They're actually just also trying to mess with people.
Yeah, or doing things like, instead of a hashtag, for example, spamming and hacking.
Yeah.
And going after certain individuals and spamming them and hacking them, and then giving those individuals the impression that it was this other group of people. And
yes.
Then one attacks the other and says that they're hackers and spammers.
Yeah.
And then waits a little bit of time and then hacks and spams the second group.
Yep.
And says it was the former group. Like,
yep.
So you can see how there's a lot of ways to go about it. There's a lot of ways to, like, create intra-community conflict.
Yeah.
And, like, once you cut off communication effectively, like, and, like, diminish communication between those groups, you can completely control.
Yeah.
Well, not completely, but you have a lot more control over, like, the flow of information.
Yeah. Yeah, that's definitely happened in this case.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I see so much of that in the Moore Murray case, where you've got the battle lines being drawn, the people backing, like, various different figures, like, oh, I trust, like, so-and-so, because so-and-so told me about, like, you know, something that some other bad actor was doing. And so, like, you create these little subgroups where it's just, I look at it as, like, I'm like, this is chaos. This is absolute chaos. But when you're engaging directly with someone, it's like, no, this person's trying to help me. You know, it's mm-hmm. like an emotional sort of, like, response. And they're preying on the fact that, like, when someone tries to help you, it's like you immediately have sympathy for them. Yeah.
Yeah. And in academia, there's this kind of thing. You have your little, like, cottage industries, and somebody comes in and tries to, you know, disrupt the apple cart, and there's animosity and tension back and forth. Like, that has to happen in a lot of industries, I imagine.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Everywhere.
But nothing like I've ever seen.
Yeah.
This little true crime community. Like, it is.
It's next level.
Yeah. It really is.
Yeah.
I think that, like, the Moore Murray community has a tendency to sort of normalize extreme behavior and extreme positions and theories.
Yeah. Yeah. So the question there is, like, well, why is that? Like, why is this the scenario where you're seeing it more so than anywhere else in your prior experience?
That's such a big question. I mean, I have my own opinions. I think Moore's case, there's so much unknown. Like, mm-hmm. we don't even really have any great clues. Like, it's such a choose-your-own-adventure. It's a blank slate. Like, you can sort of, you can make of it what you want.
Mm-hmm.
I think that that's why people's theories, they become, like, so attached to them. It becomes, like, part of their identity because there's, like, no real good clues or anything.
Right.
The way that you view the world is sort of going to have a pretty big impact on, like, what you think happened, I think.
Right. So if someone challenges that, they're challenging your whole worldview in a sense.
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, they're not, but it will feel that way.
Yeah, exactly. So, like, you have pre-existing conceptions of authority like, you dislike authority. Well, you're probably going to be more inclined toward, like, the police did it. You know what I mean? You have, like, certain conceptions of young women and how they should behave and all that stuff. Well, you're probably going to be inclined to, like, believe that she was, like, running away or pregnant or any of those. Like, it really is, like, a choose-your-own-adventure.
Yeah. Or, like, a Rorschach test.
Yeah, it is. And, like, I mean, I've argued with people that are so sure that she committed suicide, like, so sure.
Right.
And I'm like, okay. But, like, at the same time, I can't completely discount that. I can't completely discount that she ran away. Like, you can't completely discount anything 100% because you don't know.
Yeah.
So, like, the broad range of possibilities and the fact that, like, there's really not much information, like, at all.
Yeah.
And the fact that she's a young woman and, like, the pretty white woman thing and all of that kind of stuff. Like, it's just like a magnet for people.
Yeah.
And their imaginations.
Yeah. I think another aspect of it that makes it different from, like, an academic environment is that it's, like, completely unstructured. So, you know, in academia, you have these fiefdoms and these little wars and conflicts, but they play out in a, like, established battlefield where there are rules. And some rules are, like, written down and there are, like, actual rules in terms of, like, how you publish and so forth. But then there's just, like, unwritten rules as well that everyone, like, kind of knows. And in true crime, you have some of the unwritten rules, but none of the actual rules, because it's all just keyboard warriors, like, saying their thing. And the unwritten rules, I think it's such a new phenomenon. You know, academia has been around for hundreds of years. True crime as a, like, participatory thing has not been around for more than 20 years, you know, at least at the level that we see it now. So it's just, like, people haven't really worked out, like, what are the established, like, ways of doing this? And so it's, like, the Wild West.
And unlike academia, when it comes to something like true crime, and it really is like a choose your own adventure and you can make up whatever theory story you want.
Yeah.
You can incorporate your foil into the story.
That is true. Yeah. We've seen people make what I would say are like huge leaps, but also leaps you can't disprove to bring people in who have no connection. And it's like, well, why would that person be? Why would you even consider that person? But it's like, well, there's no reason I can't.
Yeah.
You know, there's no objective, like, facts or truth here. So why not? Why not accuse somebody who I didn't even know about until, like, 6 months ago, and the only thing they've done is, like, talk about the case, and there's no other reason to suspect them? Well, I'm going to suspect them.
Yeah. You can't really do that in, like, a political science debate.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you'll lose credibility, right? Like, people will see it immediately and discount you. Where that doesn't, for some reason, happen in at least the more Murray community, or it hasn't happened that much.
And I think that it's complicated by people that are financially dependent on the case.
Yes.
You know, I mean, like, there are people that it literally is their career. So I can understand how they may be more threatened than, you know, if it's just something you do in your spare time.
Yeah, certainly if you have a I've called that out before, you know, anyone who has a monetary incentive is going to be more fearful or has the potential to be more fearful than someone who doesn't, obviously.
Right.